everybody, and welcome to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the National Football League for SportsOnEarth.com, TheComeback.com, and the Cleveland Browns at OrangeandBrownReport at Scout.com. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Brian.
What's up?
Don't say things like that. That's dated.
No, that wasn't what's up. That was just a what's up.
What's up? You know, last week we had a pretty brief episode of the podcast. This week we're probably going to keep it just as short because we're not going to sit here and dissect, for example, the Pro Bowl, which is taking place this weekend. In fact, I believe the Pro Bowl draft is taking place as we speak on the NFL Network.
Oh, good for those people.
Good for those people. one thing I do want to note about the Pro Bowl is this is the year the most players have opted out for personal reasons, injury reasons, or because they're in the Super Bowl. So that's just worth noting. Guys are opting out of that free trip to Hawaii. If you're first ballot, first team Pro Bowler, you get that bonus. If you have that roster bonus or that incentive in your contract, whether or not you go to Hawaii, so you get the nod, you get the check.
But you don't get the money for playing in the bowl.
But you don't get the 60 grand for the winning team and right. The 30 grand for each player in the losing team. But indeed, that Pro Bowl is taking place this weekend. I will likely catch all of about 10 minutes of it.
That's probably 10 minutes
more than me.
As
is my typical tradition there. But there's better stuff to talk about, bigger things to talk about. Namely, we have our AFC and NFC champions.
Yes, we do.
We have the two teams set up for Super Bowl 50 at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California, a week from Sunday. Representing the AFC, the Denver Broncos, and representing the NFC, the Carolina Panthers, two number one seeds in their respective conferences, meeting up for all the marbles.
Mm-hmm.
We will go in depth on the Broncos-Panthers Super Bowl next week in our big Super Bowl 50 preview, but we do want to talk about, of course, what brought the Broncos and Panthers to this point, a.k.a. a recap of what went down on conference championship Sunday. We'll start, of course, with the Denver Broncos, who defeated the visiting New England Patriots 20-18. And while the score is close, that does not really tell the entire tale of what happened in that game. Mainly, that Broncos defense that has performed so admirably, so impressively all season long, came up big in the clutch in the AFC Championship game. They got four sacks officially. Pro Football Focus has it as five sacks on New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady. Depending on your source of information, he was also hit either 17 times, 21 times, 20 times, 23 times, or 13 times. But either way, Tom Brady spent all four quarters under duress. Not a good place for any quarterback in the NFL to be, but Tom Brady in particular, for all of his accomplishments, for everything that he does on the field, for how experienced and decorated he is, you know, you put enough pressure on him and he can Blaine Gabbert out there. He's going to hear footsteps. He's not going to step up in the pocket. He's not going to trust what he sees. He's going to be rattled. He's going to be frustrated, and you're going to get into his head. And that's exactly what the Denver Broncos did. Tom Brady also throwing two interceptions in that game to one touchdown. And to say that, yeah, I mean, Peyton Manning did stuff in that game, to be sure. The Broncos offense did positive things in that game, and they kind of turned around all those drop passes that we saw a week previous against the Pittsburgh Steelers. But the real story here, aside from the fact that this might be Peyton Manning's last rodeo, as he said to Broncos quarterback Peyton Manning's last rodeo, as he said to Patriots head coach Bill Belichick in their embrace following the game, is this defense is legitimate. And for, you know, how cliche it is to say defense wins championships, and obviously that's not the case. A balanced attack, a well-rounded team generally wins the game. Even with everything that Cam Newton has accomplished this year, he's got to be looking at this Broncos defense and going, this one might hurt.
Yeah, potentially. Going back to what you said about Brady, I mean, Ben Roethlisberger notwithstanding, I don't know of many quarterbacks that thrive when there's guys when they're getting hit that much, and there's guys constantly in their face, and it's just really tough to get the ball out. But even more so in what happened in this game was that they were getting the pressure there without blitzing. They're bringing three basically, dropping eight. It's really tough for him to get the ball out when there is that much coverage there. But you would also expect your offensive line to be able to stop a three-man rush a lot better than that. So,
yeah, you'd assume so.
That was really – and
it cost the Patriots O-line coach's job the following day, you know.
I picked the wrong winner in the game, but I did have the matchup correct as far as the key matchup being that Denver pass rush versus the pass protection for the Patriots. And obviously Denver won that battle. I was expecting the Patriots O-line to hold up a little bit better than that. I mean, I expected Denver to be good, but that was – I mean, that was crazy. And it was part that either they re-injured – somebody got re-injured against the Chiefs or something like that, or just that
Denver's just that good.
Denver's pass rush was on another level on Sunday.
They were on another level.
I think it was a little of both.
And I mean, this Denver pass rush has, you know, been strong all year. I mean, they led the league in sacks with 52 mm-hmm. in the regular season. And when you look at the issues that the Patriots have had on offensive line, combined with Tom Brady's reaction to pressure, if the Broncos put forth that pass rush that we know that they're capable of putting forth, it was going to be hard for Brady, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, it's not like the Patriots were completely out of the game. They had that final touchdown drive.
The last quarter was like as intense as you would expect.
Absolutely.
You know
it was very intense. You can't count out touchdown Tom even when he's getting knocked down, you know, on every other drop back. You know, they did get that final touchdown and tried for that 2-point conversion that ended up being picked off. And I know everybody wants to point out, well, Gronk was open. But when you're dealing with, I mean, when you look at Brady throwing that pass, he's got pressure in his face again.
Mm-hmm.
He's running for his life the whole game. And it's really tough when you know, when you know, you have the Denver pass rushers, you have Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware saying in the week leading up to this game, you only need 2 minutes to hit Tom, 2 seconds to hit Tom Brady, and we're going to get there within 2 seconds. And they were getting there within 2 seconds, and it was unbelievable. But you know, it did come down to a dramatic finish, very close to ending up in overtime. But Denver got the win. Peyton Manning now headed to his fourth career Super Bowl, looking for his second career win, try to get out on top, retire Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, I mean, it makes for a great story.
It bookends what happened with John Elway when he won his final Super Bowl and retired for Denver. And now John Elway, of course, is the director of football ops and the GM for the Broncos.
Sure.
Gary Kubiak at that point was John Elway's quarterback's coach and offensive coordinator after spending years as Elway's backup quarterback. And then now Kubiak, of course, is back as head coach for the Broncos. So you put all these things together, and you kind of have a perfect moment brewing mm-hmm. for the Broncos, Peyton Manning, Gary Kubiak, and John Elway.
True, you know, except for the opponent they have to face. But
yes, aside from the opponent they have to face. And that would be, of course, the Carolina Panthers. Panthers, of course, going 15-1 in the regular season and haven't lost since. Carolina, they did not let up against the Arizona Cardinals, defeating them 49-15. You know, it was a really rough day for Carson Palmer. And you know, a lot of people are saying, you know, Carson Palmer just can't do it in the clutch in big game situations. It's not his forte. It's not his stage. He crumbles under the pressure. But at the same time, no, he didn't have a great game. He wasn't completely on target for all of his throws. But there were key drops by Larry Fitzgerald, a guy who rarely drops passes. And the fact is, you know, Carolina's defense has been ball hawking all year long. So we shouldn't be surprised when in a game that matters this much, on their home field, you know, Carson Palmer throws one touchdown to four interceptions and loses two fumbles, you know, and those six turnovers, you can't win a game, especially a game that important, turning the ball over six times. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, and I'd say that, you
and
know,
the fact that also Carolina's defense capitalized on those turnovers.
Oh,
as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Carolina's offense.
The thing was that, I mean, but it wasn't all Carson Palmer. I mean, obviously,
No,
it wasn't a good day. And you look at the stats, and you know, you can draw that conclusion that it was just like, oh well, if Carson Palmer would have played better, you know. But that's what I'm saying.
Credit away from this very good defense.
I really feel like even if Arizona had brought their best game, because I thought that they played certainly a something below their best game.
But they seemed motivated out there. It's not like they were out there looking flat and
right, but there was just key mistakes from a lot of key contributors. Like you said, Fitzgerald had a couple drops. Patrick Patterson had that.
Patrick Peterson had that.
The fumble. Of course, he also had a pick very soon after that. But regardless, it was just like a lot of bad timing for key errors from key players.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Carson Palmer was responsible for a good number of that too.
But I don't think that takes away from his talent as a quarterback or what he's accomplished this year in his career.
Because that's the
like
thing
that.
Is that it was like a team effort to get down rather quickly, like they were.
Sure.
And at that point, you know, you're Carson Palmer. You're trying to do it. You get to the point where you're pressing, and it's gonna pile up after that. So, it was definitely a rough outing for them. But you have to give credit to the Panthers because they played out of their mind like they have so often this year.
On offense and defense. I mean, Cam was out there doing mm-hmm. Cam things, you know, running in touchdowns, diving over people for touchdowns, super camming it out mm-hmm. up out there.
It was fun to watch Carolina.
It was fun to watch Carolina, and when it comes down to that NFC Championship game, and I said it last week, I'm going to be happy either way because I've really enjoyed watching both the Panthers and the Cardinals all season long this year. Just both been very good teams. I would say the two best teams in the NFL, in my opinion, were the Cardinals and the Panthers, just because, you know, yeah, the Broncos did a lot of impressive things on defense, and they weathered, you know, Peyton Manning being hurt and having Brock Osweiler out there. But in terms of being really well-rounded and dominant from start to finish, I think that, you know, based on that, I think that Arizona and Carolina, and to a slightly lesser extent, the Cincinnati Bengals, I think, had, you know, the strongest teams in the league this year. And it's going to be really interesting, and we'll get into more detail on this next week when we actually break down and preview the Super Bowl. But just thinking about this Broncos defense against what Cam Newton and that Panthers offense can put forth, both running and passing, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of game plan Wade Phillips puts together, because you're not rushing three on Cam Newton and dropping eight.
Right.
You're not going to be able to do that because he's gonna burn you, or they're going to make some adjustments. Bad things are going to happen. And, you know, this is a quarterback of the likes that this Broncos defense has not seen this year. There's no other quarterback in the league like Cam Newton.
No.
And even if you know him, if you're in the division with him, if you face him two times a year, he's still almost impossible to game plan around.
The way he's playing right now and the way that Carolina team's playing right now, that's absolutely the case.
Right.
It's that, you know,
if you're familiar with him, it's
going
to be hard to stop.
You can think, you know, that you have a good idea of what you need to do, but that doing it during the game is the hard part.
Right. And this isn't like some sort of Tim Tebow thing. And granted, what Dick LeBeau did in the playoffs a few years back against Tim Tebow backfired. But, you know, trying to make Cam Newton beat you with his arm, well, he threw 35 passing touchdowns to 10 interceptions in the regular season. So good luck with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just him running the ball well. Jonathan Stewart's running the ball well. Mike Tolbert, especially in short yardage situations when you really have to power through,
mm-hmm.
he's done a really good job of that. You know, you've got Greg Olsen, you've got Ted Ginn catching 10 regular season touchdowns and another one in the postseason. You know, he's got weapons, you know, whether they're household names or guys that you'd think of as top receivers, number one kind of guys. He's been forced in that situation, and they've really done the maximum that you could do.
Mm-hmm.
And so thinking about just how Denver's going to game plan defensively for Cam Newton, I think is going to be interesting. We'll go into more detail about that next week. But that's what I'm really most interested in seeing in terms of a head-to-head matchup in this upcoming Super Bowl.
Sure.
Cam versus that defense.
Should be fun.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. We're going to come back, and we're going to break down some year-end awards.
All right.
Give our MVP and our Player of the Year honors and all that stuff. So stay tuned. We'll be right back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. We're back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and it's a tradition after the close of an NFL season, after the end of the regular season, for all kinds of media outlets and so forth to put forth their year-end awards for players and coaches. Pro Football Writers, we already did it. Peter King and Monday Morning Quarterback has done it. Associated Press will do it the day before the Super Bowl. So we figure we should do it here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast.
Sure.
And we're not going to go completely in-depth like we did with the Pro Football Writers. We're not going to have an all-rookie team or an all-AFC team because breaking all that stuff down, I think, might be a little bit of a snooze fest.
Yeah, I don't want to lose anybody.
I don't want to lose anybody. But we do have a few key categories we're going to talk about today. MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Offensive Player of the Year, Comeback Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year, Defensive Rookie of the Year, Offensive Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year, and Assistant Coach of the Year. Let's start with the MVP. You know, all season long.
You don't want to lead up to the to build up to that MVP?
No, MVP's first.
We're just going to
break
valuable. Right
into it. He's most valuable. So for a good part of the season, the real debate for MVP came down to three quarterbacks. Cam Newton, Carson Palmer, and Tom Brady. For me, Tom Brady was kind of an outlier in that situation, but still in the discussion. And this is this, you know, and we've been talking about Cam as MVP since week eight, essentially, since mid-season. And I think it's held up. Cam Newton, for me, is the MVP. I really appreciate what Carson Palmer has done this year. I really appreciate what Tom Brady has done this year. But in terms of everything Cam Newton has brought to that team, not just 35 passing touchdowns, 10 interceptions, not just 10 rushing touchdowns, but the leadership, the ownership, the ability to lead his team through some very adverse situations in terms of injuries, in terms of Michael Ower being the left tackle, all kinds of things that could have sunk this team's season. And Cam Newton took the Panthers, put them on his shoulder, and it worked. And he's having fun, and he enjoys playing football in a league where they don't want their players to look like they're having fun out there anymore. So you put all that together, I think there's nobody more valuable to his team and nobody more valuable to the National Football League right now than Cam Newton. So Super Cam is my MVP.
I'll start off by saying a lot of times people start talking about MVPs, and I hear a lot of this, if so and so wasn't on this team, they wouldn't have done whatever.
Sure.
And like the back a couple years ago when, Peyton got hurt and was out the whole year, and
so people want to name him the
most
valuable
player. The Colts were terrible, so they wanted to name him the most valuable. That's not at all how I look at it. I look at it as it's a league MVP, so it's
sure.
Who's the most valuable to the league. And when you have to look, when you're looking at who the most valuable to the league is, you have to look at who's the single player that makes the most difference as far as adding to the excitement of the league, such as Steph Curry or versus LeBron in the NBA.
Sure.
Both those guys are amazingly talented and amazingly exciting players to watch.
Right.
And you can hear arguments on who you say is more important to the league as far as what they're bringing. And with that sort of definition, I mean, I think it's hard to argue against Cam, and it's because he's doing things at the quarterback position that we've never seen. And
true.
He's doing it in a way that's exciting to watch. It's fun to watch. And
you don't have to be a Panthers fan to enjoy what Cam Newton is putting forth out there.
He's one. That's the thing, is that think about how many people he's won over this year. How many people that at the beginning of the year they're like, "Oh, okay, cool, Cam," and then like now they're like, "Wow, Cam."
Yeah.
And it's like most people that I talk to that follow the NFL at all are really into what they saw Cam do this year. So that's why I don't think it's much of a debate, honestly. I think that he was so good and so dominant, and like you said, to his team, even he was such a leader, and that's always an important part of it too, I think. The right kind of attitude, the right kind of character in that player that's bringing all that excitement to the game. So I'm definitely in on Cam as well.
For Defensive Player of the Year, I'm going to go with J.J. Watt. For similar reasons why I'm going with Cam as MVP, only J.J. Watt isn't affecting all phases of all the games in the way that Cam Newton does. I mean, he does try to carry the team on his back. There are instances where games are won or lost, or particularly won because of a play or a series of plays that J.J. Watt is capable of making. Granted, what we saw out of Cam has been a little bit more carry the team on the back, I think, this year than J.J. Watt. But still, to think about a defensive player, a veteran defensive player, and someone who's playing at a high level, dominating football games, and really being, you know, the best player on the field for the Houston Texans, oftentimes the best player in a given game, depending on opponent, it's hard to steer away from J.J. Watt. I think there are a lot of other fabulous defensive players in the league that are, in the next couple of years, really going to start challenging Watt for that top defensive spot in the NFL. But right now, to me, there isn't anybody to unseat Watt just yet. Though there are some honorable mentions being worth put out there. You know, what Von Miller has done this year, for example, has been highly impressive. You know, Khalil Mack has just been out of control. Mm-hmm. But I think when you go with the entire body of a season-long body of work, I'm going with Houston Texans J.J. Watt.
Since this isn't for anything, and I don't want to
just not for anything.
Since I don't want to sit here and just agree with you all the time,
sure.
I'll play devil's advocate here and say somebody else.
Okay.
Because and partly because I believe this. I think that J.J. Watt has certainly been that guy. I don't know that I felt that from him this year, as far as being the best defensive player in the league this year. As far as what we saw on the field, I'm going to go with Kuechly. And
all right.
And it's mainly just his ability to cover in the pass game, or cover against the pass, and on top of, you know, his just ridiculous instincts and athleticism and everything that he brings to the game, his coverage skills is just unreal, and it's game changing for that Panthers defense. Especially when you pair him up with a guy like Josh Norman, who had an outstanding year as well,
right.
at the corner for them. Kuechly just it adds a dimension to that defense that you don't see, and that's that coverage ability from your middle linebacker. And he was so impressive to me all year that I'll throw that hat in the ring. I don't even know how many people are banging the drum for him anyway, but that's just my feeling on the matter.
Going to Offensive Player of the Year, I'm one of those people who separate MVP out from Offensive Player of the Year. Some people aren't. If I was going to overlap, then I would obviously have Cam Newton as both, but I like to spread out some award love. That's just my approach to it personally. So I'm going to go with Carson Palmer as Offensive Player of the Year. You know, we've seen that the Arizona Cardinals have the capacity to win games without him, because we saw it last year after he, you know, had the knee injury, but they have a much better chance, obviously, of winning with Palmer under center. And I think that he had a fabulous year. You know, it was kind of a rebirth year for him coming off of that injury. Larry Fitzgerald obviously has helped out Palmer's bottom line quite a bit this season. But it's just, and I know this is all very quarterback centric, but I'm going to go with Carson Palmer. Otherwise I would go with Cam Newton, but I also just wanted to use this as a platform to say, I've long been a fan of Carson Palmer. I think that there have been a lot of situations where he's not been able to maximize his full potential, whether it was the contract situation and everything that went on in Cincinnati or the knee injuries. And I think that he's finally starting to come into his own. He has a few, I think, very good years left ahead of him. And honestly, you know, we've seen the Cardinals pull out wins without him when he was hurt last year. But in terms of this year, I think Carson Palmer was that motive factor for this very, very, very good Arizona Cardinals team, very good offense. So I'm going to go Carson Palmer.
All right. Well, you know, again, I think if this is, you know, if
you can overlap with Cam if you want.
If I was, I want to make this an interesting podcast. So,
sure.
I'd say that if I were voting for the, you know, Pro Football Writers or something like that, I'd probably would overlap and say that, you know, Cam, just because, you know, because he was just so incredible this year. But since we're not, and we're just trying to have a nice conversation here,
sure.
I'm going to throw Antonio Brown out there. And that's because, and this, granted, there was a stretch when Ben was out and
it was Michael Vick and then Landry Jones.
You know, obviously, his success is predicated upon the ball being delivered to him. And that happened a lot better when Ben was in there.
Sure.
So, but even with that caveat, the amount of craziness that he was able to produce.
He still had a ton of catches, a ton of yards, a ton of touchdowns, in that situation.
Imagine what his numbers would look like had Ben been healthy all year.
I mean,
and not to mention had his, you know, his running back compatriots been healthy for the entirety of the year, that would have helped even more as far as, you know, keeping defenses honest and
D'Angelo
opening things up for
a lot of passes after Le'Veon Bell got hurt.
Yeah, no, I'm saying like both of, I'm saying both Le'Veon Bell and D'Angelo Williams, it, had the two of them been healthy all year,
sure,
it would have been a crazy running attack to pair with the just the amazingness that, that Antonio Brown put out there. So just an incredible year from Antonio Brown, and I'll throw his name out there for offensive player of the year.
Comeback player of the year for me is a no-brainer. It's Chiefs safety Eric Berry, who came back after battling and defeating lymphoma last year. A lot of people wanted to hand it to Adrian Peterson, but I don't consider what happened with Adrian Peterson particularly a comeback, because he controlled the situation that caused him to miss all of the 2014 season, which was going a little too far with the physical discipline of his son. Eric Berry, meanwhile, he overcame cancer and then got back on the field and played football at the high level we've always known from Eric Berry. And, you know, you want your comeback player of the year to be a good story, a positive story, one of triumph and redemption and a good look for the league at the same time as recognizing a player who deserves, who came back from adversity. So for me, it's 100% Eric Berry.
Well, I mean, it's kind of hard for me to argue with that.
You don't have to disagree with everything I pick.
Yeah, I know, but
just for conversation.
That being hard to argue with, I'll just throw in a mention for like a runner-up situation, and I think that this is a good spot for Carson Palmer to get an award, just because.
Yeah, he did have the knee injury again.
Not just the knee injury that he had last year. It was almost like comeback from 10 years ago. Because it had been so long since Carson Palmer had a full healthy year, mm-hmm. where he played up to his ability and wasn't hampered by weirdness with the team he's on or his injuries or any of that stuff. And it was kind of like a career resurgence for Carson Palmer. So it's like comeback from a decade ago, you know. I think that's worthy of mention here, although Eric Berry probably should get the nod because, yeah, that's cancer.
That's cancer. For Rookie of the Year, I am going with St. Louis Rams running back Todd Gurley. You know, Todd Gurley comes off this horrific knee injury, you know, and people were not even certain once he was drafted that he'd be able to play most or all of the year, depending on how his knee responded. And he had a really great season, 229 carries, over 1,100 rushing yards, 10 rushing touchdowns. You know, he was a game changer for an otherwise kind of shaky St. Louis Rams offense at times until they kind of settled in a little bit. You know, Case Keenum now looks like the starting quarterback of the future. But they seem like they have a nice run game in place with Todd Gurley. And given his production, his yards, his touchdowns, his influence on that offense, and the fact that he's coming back from a very significant injury that a lot of people would be quite wary about in terms of drafting this guy in the first round and trying to get him out there and ready to play, and not, you know, partially red, you know, medical redshirting him for his rookie season, for example. So I'm going to go with Todd Gurley as my Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could. I just looking through the offensive rookies out there, or this is overall rookie, sorry.
This is overall rookie.
Overall rookie of the year. I mean, just looking at all the rookies, you know, it's kind of hard to see anybody that really stood out. The thing with Gurley is he you know, missed those first four games or so, whatever that number was.
Yeah, but he still ended up with 10 touchdowns and 1,100
And that's
rushing
what I'm saying.
Yards.
That's it's both good. That's a both good and bad point to look at, because you know, it's like, well, he missed a quarter of the season, but at the same time, in three quarters of the season, he was able to put up, you know, the kind of performances that he did. So, it's tough to argue that. I mean, I thought Jameis had a good year. There's at least reason for positive feelings there. You know, Mariota had flashes, you know, things like that. But yeah, looking around, you know, I don't see anybody that quite showed that they could have the impact in the future in the league quite like Gurley did.
And let's move to Offensive Rookie of the Year, because you brought up Jameis Winston, and that's where I'm going to put Jameis.
Okay.
Because, you know, and if I did the overlap kind of thing like I told you I just don't do, then obviously I think I would double up with Todd Gurley. But I just wanted to, you know, I think there's a good honorable mention and give Jameis the Offensive Rookie of the Year award, considering he was out there as a rookie quarterback with a rebuilt offensive line that also featured two rookies. And then he was out there looking pretty good, considering the situation that ended with the coaches all being fired and now Dirk Cutter as the new head coach. Given the situation that he was entering into, where Tampa Bay was before they drafted him, the situation on the offensive line that could have been no good for him. He had a really solid season, and I think that he's got some real promise as a long-term starter in the NFL. For me, you know, with Marcus Mariota in contrast, for me the jury is still out, partially because of Tennessee, and partially because he was very erratic. I mean, as a rookie, mm-hmm. he should be, but I think Jameis was a little bit more of a cool customer. Took on a big leadership role as far as a rookie quarterback out there, and his teammates really responded to him as well. And so for that, I'm putting together that total package, and I'm going to have Jameis Winston as my offensive rookie.
All right. I definitely like that argument. I mean, again, if I was voting, I probably would just overlap and go with Gurley again. Just to have some good conversation here, I'm going to bring up an honorable mention of David Johnson, the running back in Arizona.
Sure,
and
yeah.
The issue with him is that
it took
a while.
Chris Johnson got hurt,
because Chris Johnson was there and
playing very well.
And playing well.
You could make him a comeback player of the year. I mean, he got shot in the offseason,
too. And I think even at the beginning of the year, I think Andre Ellington was still kind of technically the backup, and so it was like between those two and even he got hurt later in the year. But what we saw David Johnson develop into was somebody who looks like the Arizona can ride for a while. Like, this could be their guy.
He's almost – I wouldn't say he's exactly the same, but he's sort of an Arizona Le'Veon Bell in the sense that he's turning into a running back who can be on the field, you know, for most of the plays in a game as a runner, as a receiver, and as a blocker. And mm-hmm. so I think that, you know, that really increases his value because he can be an all-around back.
Right. Like I said, I don't know if there was enough sample size to throw into the actual Offensive Rookie of the Year winner, but I'd say he's worth an honorable mention just because looking back at the end of the season, he seems like one of the rookies that I was most excited about.
Moving on to Defensive Rookie of the Year, there's a lot of guys, really, that you could pick through this season. But I'm going to go with Chiefs cornerback Marcus Peters with his 60 tackles and 8 interceptions, making game-changing plays for the Chiefs, for a Chiefs team that, you know, made it all the way to the playoffs. A lot, in part, to plays that he has made. I mean, that cannot be underestimated. He's a very good part of a very good defense. And there are other guys you could make arguments for, and I'm not going to sit here and say it's Peters, nobody else, because there was a lot of good defensive play out of rookies this year. But, when you talk about 8 interceptions on a season for a rookie cornerback is a really difficult position to transition mm-hmm. from college to the NFL. Cornerback and wide receiver are two positions that take some seasoning. To adjust,
not a lot of guys come right out of the gate.
To adjust the physicality, the speed mm-hmm. of the receivers you're dealing with. Everybody's a number one receiver compared to what you faced in college. And for him to adapt that quickly and just look so fluid and natural out there in his first season, I think that's my reasoning for him being my defensive rookie.
Yeah, I'm mainly sticking with him because that was who I had thought of, and I don't have a good enough argument for anybody else built up and ready to go here. So there was a little bit of a lull, I'd say, in the first 5-6 weeks of the season. After, of course, he started off gangbusters against Houston in that first game. And that was the thing, is he was pressed into duty because somebody was hurt, I can't remember who, at the beginning of the season. And so he was starting when maybe a little bit earlier than they expected, being the first week of his career.
He was a quick study.
And he picked, it helped, hat tip to Brian Hoyer for giving the ball a couple times that game, and he took one of the house there. So I think that helps with his confidence going forward to start off his season there. So, after that, roughly the midpoint to the second half, he was one of the most locked down guys in the league.
Yes.
And like you said, as a rookie to do that as a cornerback, that's just a tough thing to do.
Moving on to Head Coach of the Year. For me, I'm gonna go with who I voted for with my PWFA ballot, and that is Chiefs head coach Andy Reid. And I'm going with Andy Reid because the Chiefs started out the season 1-5 and then ended up winning out for the rest of the season. And as somebody who has spent the last few years covering, for example, the Cleveland Browns very closely, knowing how difficult it is for a team to have a start like that, win their opening game, lose the next five, and then be able to turn things around to the point where they don't lose another game yet again, I think really speaks to the leadership of Andy Reid, for his ability to corral and calm down that locker room, tell them it's not over, we're a very good team, we can go out and win these games, don't let these losses destroy the morale of the locker room. And for a team to turn things around like that is a sign of strong leadership. And that's not just leadership amongst the players in the locker room and the veterans. That's leadership amongst the coaches. And so I want to give a hat tip to Andy Reid for that. So for that reason, because, Ron Rivera and the Carolina Panthers, they went 15-1 this year. That's a very good argument for Rivera to be coach of the year. But I would argue that going 1-5 and then winning out is just as rare and as difficult as going 15-1. Plus, it also has the additional factor of that could have gone really poorly because the morale could have been completely in the garbage after that sixth game. So that, to me, tips the scales in Andy Reid's favor.
I'm going to go ahead and go with Ron Rivera here. I mean, there's only been a handful of teams that have had less than two losses in a season, going all the way back, or at least through the Super Bowl and all that. So it just, the fact that that's such a hard feat to accomplish. He had, who we're agreeing was the MVP on his team, so it definitely helps with that.
Also gave Cam the freedom to be Cam.
Right, and that's
and a
thing.
Lot of other head coaches might be a little bit scared of that.
Right, that's
in terms of like the RG3 Johnny Manziel, got to get him in the pocket at all times.
Well,
kind of,
right, that's the thing is it's not about trying to control this guy. It's about letting him flourish in what he does. So. That definitely takes some good leadership from the coach's perspective. He's helped, guide this team to have this stingy defense that they have and incredible defense. And also I look at it from the fact that, just a few years ago after Cam's rookie season, his job was on the line and they decided to keep him. And just last year, I think there was a lot of talk about, is he on the hot seat? Or is he going to last after this year? When they started the season 3-8-1 or whatever that record was that they started off last year,
mm-hmm.
and he turned it around last year, and it just kept rolling all the way through this season to here we are, on the brink of the Super Bowl, and it's going to be Rivera and the Carolina Panthers. So I'm going to go. It seems like a little too easy to pick that one, but I'll go ahead and pick Ron Rivera.
Doesn't make it difficult. I mean, it's 15-1, right? And then finally, let's go with our assistant coach or coordinator, if you will, of the year. For me, it's a toss-up. I can't decide. I've been thinking about it and thinking about it and thinking about it. But like, when I really come down to it, if I don't have to pick one, I'm not gonna. So, Wade Phillips, Denver Broncos defensive coordinator, and Hugh Jackson, offensive coordinator for the Cincinnati Bengals, now head coach of the Cleveland Browns. I'm going to go with a toss-up and say both of those. Obviously, we see what has happened with the Denver Broncos defense this year. Last year, Wade Phillips was unemployed. I mean, he's tweeted about it already. Last year, I was unemployed, and now I'm headed to the Super Bowl. What he's done with, granted, a lot of great defensive assets, Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, Aqib Talib, guys like that, but that he's been able to maximize those talents and build this extraordinarily stingy and aggressive defense, one that can rush three against Tom Brady and get home and then still trust what it can do in coverage, or they can blitz and still trust that they have enough assets and coverage, enough talent and coverage to, if that blitz doesn't get home, not give up a 60-yard completion. So I'm very impressed with that. I've always liked Wade Phillips' coach defenses, especially when he has the talent to execute his vision in the way that he wants. And that's what he's really got in Denver. And so, on the defensive side, definitely Wade. When it comes to Hugh Jackson, what he's done in the past couple of years in Cincinnati, building and rebuilding Andy Dalton into a confident quarterback. You know, the creative formations that he's been employing, the use of running backs, how he's maximized the talents of you know, tight end Tyler Eifert, for example, out there, and just the innovations that he's put forth on offense, which I think will carry over at least to some degree with the Cleveland Browns. I think that's worthy also of rewarding. So Wade Phillips, Hugh Jackson, it's a toss-up for me.
Yeah, I'd say I think you have a good argument there with Wade Phillips. I'll bring up Todd Haley just because when Ben went down, things were a lot different, but they were still found a way to muscle through games, and I think that just the development of that run game, even without Le'Veon Bell this year, was pretty. You got to kind of look at your offensive line coach as well.
Yeah, maybe tip of the hat to Mike Munchak.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know. So, but even with that, you know, a lot of the craziness of how good that Steelers offense felt at times this year. You know, they were quite a machine, and you know, it's not Haley's fault that they don't have a better backup for Ben. So
that's not Haley's fault. That's true. Well, that concludes our F-Ball NFL Podcast 2015 year-end NFL Awards. Because if everybody else does it, why can't we?
Yeah, whatever. It was fun.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to sending on home here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. And that about does it for this week's edition of the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm, of course, your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the National Football League at thecomeback.com and sportsonearth.com. I also cover the Cleveland Browns at scout.com's Orange and Brown Report. You can also find me on Twitter at FBall_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea.
And I'm Brian. Outside of this podcast, I can be found on the Twitter machine at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
And while there's no actual NFL football on this weekend, I mean, there's the Pro Bowl, but
does that count as actual?
But that does give everybody, you know, an extra week to plan their menus, get all of your supplies together for your big Super Bowl bash.
Maybe this will be the test run. Like you do the first stab at trying to make this dish for the
party.
Exactly.
You got a weekend.
So you
got to
try
can,
it
you
out.
Can, you
make sure
your,
you do it right.
Get your game plan together.
Work
much
the
like
kinks out.
Much like the Broncos and Panthers will be spending this week trying to get their game plan together for the Super Bowl. And we'll be back though here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast next week to give our full Super Bowl preview and predictions, and of course to cover any breaking news around the NFL that may transpire between now and next week. So thanks to everyone for listening and joining us this week, and we hope to have you back next week here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast.
All right, later.
Peace.